Lesson 15. Section 1. News in brief.
American reporter Nicholas Danilov arrived back in the United States today and accused Soviet spy Gennady Zakharov left for the Soviet Union. Administration officials insisted that there is no connection between the two as they announced plans for a meeting in Iceland October 11th and 12th between President Reagan and Soviet leader Gorbachev. We have two reports on today's developments. First, NPR's Jim Angle at the White House.
The preparatory meeting in Iceland was proposed by Secretary Gorbachev in a letter to President Reagan September 19th. Secretary Shultz said today the meeting will give the two leaders an opportunity to give a special push to preparations for a full-fledged summit later this year in the United States. President Reagan made clear his agreement to the meeting came after an agreement between the two nations on how to resolve the Danilov affair.
The recent release of Danilov made the meeting possible. I could not have accepted and held that meeting if he was still being held.
But the president and others insisted that Danilov's release without trial had no connection with Gennady Zakharov, the accused Soviet spy who was allowed to plead no contest to espionage charges today and ordered out of the country. Secretary Shultz tied Zakharov's departure to the Soviet agreement to release human rights activist Yuri Orlov and allow him and his wife to emigrate. I'm Jim Angle at the White House.
The Vatican today denounced all homosexual activity as morally evil and said homosexuals should be taught that their sexual practices are unacceptable to the Catholic Church. A document was relayed to all Catholic bishops and restates the Church's position that homosexual tendencies are not sinful, but activity is. This is NPR in Washington. University of Maryland basketball coach Lefty Driesell resigned today, another victim of the cocaine-induced death of basketball star Len Bias. Paul Guggenheimer reports.
Driesell's resignation came as no surprise today. In recent weeks, advisors to Maryland Chancellor John Slaughter and some members of the Board of Regents were pushing for Driesell's removal. This morning at Maryland's Cole Fieldhouse, Driesell made it official.
I want to announce that I am stepping down as the head basketball coach at Maryland. I will remain at Maryland in the position of assistant athletic director. The university has agreed to honor the financial terms of my contract, which has 8 years remaining.
Driesell coached basketball at Maryland for 17 years, but following Bias's death, Driesell told a grand jury that he ordered an assistant to remove evidence of drug use from Bias's room, and subsequent revelations that his players were having academic problems proved to be Driesell's undoing. For National Public Radio, I'm Paul Guggenheimer in Washington.
Section 2. News in Detail.
American journalist Nicholas Danilov returned to the United States today a free man. He walked off a plane at Dulles Airport outside Washington late this afternoon after a month's detention in the Soviet Union. Danilov had these words for members of his family and journalists at the airport.
There's always a silver lining in every cloud. In Russian, нет худа без добра. And I believe that the cloud that hung over Soviet American affairs is dissipating. I understand that the president is going to meet with Mr. Gorbachev shortly in Iceland. And this, to me, is a wonderful thing. In my case, the investigation into the charges against me was concluded. There was no trial, and I left as an ordinary free American citizen. In Zakharov's case, there was a trial. And he received a sentence. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact terms of the sentence. And he left. I do not believe that these two things are in any way equivalent.
NPR's Richard Gonzalez is at Dulles Airport now. Richard, what was the mood of Danilov and his family when he arrived?
Well, the Danilovs enjoyed a rather emotional reunion here at Dulles Airport. Danilov was cheerfully greeted by his daughter Miranda and his son Caleb. They celebrated his arrival with a bottle of champagne, and they brought a dozen yellow roses for their father. Caleb presented his father with a T-shirt that had been printed to say Free Nick Danilov, and now had been amended to say Freed Nick Danilov, which Danilov displayed with obvious relish to the cameramen and photographers that were gathered here.
What seemed most on Danilov's mind when he spoke with reporters today?
Well, as you heard him say, Danilov seemed very, very relieved that his own personal honor and integrity as a journalist had been preserved in the negotiations that had freed him. And he repeated once or twice that he felt that he had not been traded for Zakharov as a spy.
Is there any chance that Danilov, who is completing a second tour as a journalist in Moscow, will return to the Soviet Union?
Well, Danilov told us that he left the Soviet Union with his passport, and just as importantly, with his multiple entry visa, which is still valid, he said. And he ended his news conference by telling reporters that yesterday in Moscow, feeling that he might be leaving the Soviet Union soon, he had placed new flowers on the grave of his great-great-grandfather, who was buried in Moscow. And he says, I'm hopeful that I'll be able to do that again sometime.
But who knows what will happen? What else can you tell us about what the scene looked like there?
Well, I can tell you that there were throngs of reporters here, some of whom wanted to greet Mr. Danilov with applause, and that it took a while for Danilov to get their attention so that he could tell them what they wanted to hear. I think that the most obvious thing is that he had a lot of friends here among the press corps that were very happy to see him, and I think that he had a sparkle in his eye that says, well, I'm finally home.
So he seemed a lot more rested, perhaps, than in Frankfurt?
Rested, relieved, and I'd have to say well scrubbed.
NPR's Richard Gonzalez talking with us from Dulles Airport.
Section 3, Special Report.
Today, Van Gorden Souter, the president of CBS News, resigned from his job. This resignation, the latest move in a CBS shakeup, which yesterday brought the ouster of CBS chief executive officer Thomas Wyman. He was replaced by Lawrence Tisch, the company's leading stockholder. Also yesterday, the 82-year-old founder of CBS, William Paley, came out of retirement to become the company's chairman. Writer Ken Aletta says the CBS board probably put the changes into motion even before the board meeting yesterday.
There was a regularly scheduled board dinner, an informal dinner the night before, which is normal for a monthly board meeting, and Wyman canceled it, feeling that the board was so polarized in the battle between Lawrence Tisch and Paley on one side and Thomas Wyman and some of the board members who were supporters of his on the other. But the board decided to meet anyway without Tisch or Paley or Wyman, and they apparently met till quite late, which would be Tuesday night. Then at the meeting yesterday, Mr. Wyman presented a budget as planned, and apparently the board unanimously was dissatisfied with that budget presentation. And then it was learned that in fact, there had been, at least I'm informed, that there were overtures made by Wyman and by others aligned with him to try and sell the company, to try and find a white knight to stave off Lawrence Tisch and Bill Paley.
Last minute scrambling by Wyman.
Yes, and in the end, the board asked Tisch and Paley to leave, and then they asked Wyman to leave. So the three principal actors in this drama were out of the room, and the board discussed it, and I'm told, unanimously reached the judgment that it was time for a change.
So it's not really fair to say that Lawrence Tisch came rolling into that meeting and just took it over.
Well, apparently the board took it over. What happened was, as of late last week, this board was ready to support Tom Wyman. Something happened in the last several days to turn this board around. And I think, in part, that something that happened was a growing sense of dissatisfaction with Wyman. And I suspect also a sense that the board probably had that the continued bloodletting in the press would only continue if Wyman remained at the helm, and they had to stop it.
Yeah. Let me ask you for a very simplistic answer to a complicated question here. CBS got into this sort of trouble because of problems endemic to the television industry now or because of mismanagement at CBS?
Both. Clearly, same thing is happening at all the networks. They're facing a future, at least the immediate future, where revenues no longer grow at the same rate they used to, which is 10, 12, 14% a year. Revenues are declining at all three networks. Advertisers are finding other outlets for their money, more efficient outlets, cheaper outlets for their money. There's new competition from fourth network, from technology, from cable. Second, there was a feeling that Wyman, though he was a good manager on paper and had a good, strong managerial background, was not a people manager. Now, television is populated by a lot of famous people who have rather large egos, also rather large talents. But in any case, those egos require some stroking. Tom Wyman was not a stroker. He was a go-by-the-book kind of a manager. So he was a stranger, for instance, to the most important division of CBS, not the division that produces the most money, but the one that produces the most prestige, and that's the news division.
Mm-hmm. The CBS News people, as you mentioned, have been disenchanted of late, and they're probably encouraged by this move, but specifically, what were they fussing about? How have they been mismanaged? Can anyone say?
Well, I think there are probably a thousand different stories. One story that's received a lot of prominence in the last week is Bill Moyer's story, which is a feeling that the entertainment values at CBS have been enshrined at the expense of news values. That, however, is probably also a little simplistic. If you go back to Edward R. Murrow, the late sainted Edward R. Murrow, who was a wonderful journalist, but he was also a journalist who sometimes enshrined entertainment values. For instance, if you go back and look at person-to-person interviews that he did on a program called Person to Person, it was a kind of a gee whiz, oh gosh, it's so nice to be invited into your home kind of an atmosphere, and hardly hard news. But I think Moyer's complaint suggests how polarized the situation at CBS is.
Ken Aletta, he's the author of the book Greed and Glory on Wall Street, talking with us from New York.